This episode is brought to you by our Hosting Handbook mini course. Whether you're already hosting guests on Airbnb or you're still trying to soak up as much knowledge as you can, this course is the ultimate cheat sheet.
It can transform your hosting from hobby to business. Get our coveted templates that include the welcome book, turnover handbook, and supply closet spreadsheet, and other great bonuses you don't want to miss.
Our hosting handbook is usually priced at $297, but for a very limited time, you can grab your seat for just $67. Head to www.thanksforvisiting.me/hosting handbook to get all the deets. Now, on to the show.
You're listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. We believe hosting with heart is at the core of every successful short-term rental. With Annette's background in business operation and Sarah's extensive hospitality management and interior design experience, this dynamic duo has welcomed more than 2,000 guests from 25 countries, earning them over $500,000 and garnering them over 650 five-star reviews. Now they're ready to share creative ways for your listing to stand out, to serve your guests, and be profitable. Each episode will have knowledgeable guests who bring value to the short-term rental industry, or Annette and Sarah will share stories about their own experiences so you can implement actionable improvements to your own rentals. Whether you're experienced, new, or nervous to start your own short-term rental, we promise you'll feel right at home. Here are your hosts, Annette and Sarah.
Hey, hey, listeners. I am Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant, and together we are...
Thanks for visiting. Welcome back. So we are pumped to be here.
Yeah.
We've got an STR share Sunday for you, and we're traveling all the way
to Hawaii.
Which we love you, Hawaii. We know that it's been tough to get
but they're opening back up.
Travelers out to you. But yes, that's what I hear, that you're opening back up. Things are gonna be great because we can't stay away from you for too long.
Right. Sarah and I are big fans of Hawaii. So let's who is it?
Okay, so we have to be quite honest with you listeners. We're not positive on how to pronounce the Instagram handle, but we think it is thenenenest.kawaii. So thenenenest.kawaii is our Instagram handle. Annette, tell us about the Nene Nest.
First of all, they have been following us for a really long time.
Thank you, guys.
And using our hashtag, so I want to give them a shout out there. And I want to say the very first thing that I noticed on their Instagram, because they did use our tag, STR Share Sunday, I have not seen this before. So everybody take note. They had a playlist, an island playlist to listen to. And I thought, that is such a great idea, especially if you have a very specific location.
Is that via Spotify or how do you do that? How do you
access it? I think it was Spotify, but
that's cool.
It was so, I was like, wow, yeah. Link in bio, yes, it's on Spotify. And I was like, that is,
genius.
Says Kyle was the one that made this one up. But I just was like, man, I would be jamming right away when I checked in.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was, I have not seen that before. So I wanted to bring that up to everyone's attention to put, you know, what kind of vibe you want your short-term rental to be giving off. You can give your guests a playlist.
So they have their own website, which is no surprise to us. All of the rock stars, or a lot of the rock stars we share here on hashtag STR Share Sunday, have their own website, which is super smart, you guys. You don't want to leverage these platforms that you don't own too much. Have your own home on the web if you can. And but once you're there, you can... I love how they have featured in. So we haven't talked about that. But you guys, leverage PR opportunities. Leverage the media. People want content all the time. So tell them you've got a great short-term rental. See if your story, your pad is worth sharing on their platform, whether it's an online blog or, hey, a podcast, YouTube channel, all those mediums. That's a great way to get your space out there, and it's good SEO for you and your place. Anything else, Annette, before you move on?
I just want to say one other thing that Melissa and Kyle did that I love. In their IG, it says 152 steps to the ocean.
Hey.
They made it super clear how close they are, and we appreciate that. So if you would like to be featured, please use the hashtag #STRShareSunday, and we will make sure to get you on the show.
All right, we are on to today's guest.
Let's do it.
We're really good at getting great guests in
it. Yeah. We have to thank our other guests for getting us better guests. So we were introduced to this amazing guest today by Levi Kelly. Shout out to Levi. If you do not follow him on YouTube, get there. But actually, we got two for you today. So you want to, this is a twofer. You're going to follow Levi, subscribe to his channel. If you haven't, make sure you listen to his episode.
He was episode 79 from September 10th, 2020. He is a rock star YouTuber. Actually, small world, he came out to a property that I manage here in Columbus, Ohio. Yep. And actually, his YouTube video dropped today. So that's pretty cool. And Levi was like,
you've got to have, drum roll, Sarah, who's our guest today?
You're saying this because you want me to get the last name.
No, we have Robert Abasolo. And what's cool, we talk about Levi being a YouTuber. Levi comes from more of a guest perspective. And Robert comes from the host slash builder all things view. So,
Robert, welcome to our show.
You would think that after working from home for 8 months now, I would have figured out that I was unmuted. I was getting deep into like my childhood and kind of telling you about like my favorite memories.
Oh my gosh.
That's okay. We're here now.
We're here now. Actually, this is a really good, because I don't know. I've watched several of your videos, and what I love about them is just like, I feel like I really know you as a person. Like you make jokes, like it's relaxed, it's casual, like I love your channel. It's really cool. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here. Tell our listeners a little bit about your story, your background, how you got to, you just started your YouTube channel. It's already killing it. Tell us about the Rob story.
Sure. So I am a creative copywriter, meaning I write words for brands. I make brands sound cooler than they are. I moved to Kansas City right out of school. I went to school at the University of Texas, and I moved to Kansas City to work for Gatorade, where I was kind of like cutting my teeth in the advertising world. And my wife and I lived there for about 3.5 years and decided to move to LA because, well, we tried to move to New York, but we just couldn't work out the financials there. So we were like, what's the next most expensive?
Wait, city? LA makes more financial sense than New York. I want to see what your pencil and your calculator look like.
Well, here's the deaf teacher. She's a teacher, and she's a deaf education teacher.
Okay.
So she's not actually allowed to like teach in New York without having to re-go through her master's program. And, you know, we were already in student debt from the first master's program.
Gotcha.
So it turned out that LA, California is very flexible on that kind of stuff. And you can just like transfer your credentials.
Cool.
So that's why it made more sense at the time. And I'm really glad it did. Like, I'm super enamored with New York. I've always wanted to live there. I still would like to live there. But, you know, after crunching the numbers many, many times, it doesn't work. But somehow we landed in LA and we moved into our first apartment. And, you know, we were paying $1,850, which was $700 more than our house that was like 1,000 square feet bigger. And, you know, we were just tired of paying rent, you know, so high here in LA. And I was like, well, why don't we buy a house? And if we're going to pay a high amount of, you know, monthly, let's just knock it out towards equity in the house. And so she was like, great. So as soon as we moved out of that apartment, we had to make the decision if we wanted to, you know, break the lease for $2,000, or if we wanted to, you know, Airbnb it. Now, I told my wife, I was like, hey, I have an idea. I've heard about Airbnb. It sounds super like a cool idea. People are like letting people stay in their houses. What could go wrong? And she was like, I mean, if you think so. So, you know, I was like, yeah, also, I don't want to spend $2,000 to break our lease. So we put our first apartment on Airbnb for 6 months to finish the remainder of that lease. And that ended up becoming such a life-changing moment for me, because that's when I realized, that's when it all kind of clicked in for me that, you know, there was something here, right? There's something with the short-term rental industry. And the house that we bought actually had a little 300 square foot apartment underneath as well. And I was like, I think if we buy this house, it's really expensive, you know, especially for us. It was 4 times the cost of our Kansas City house. And I was like, but I think if we put it on Airbnb, it will cover half the mortgage. And she was like, all right, I trust you if you think so. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And that's exactly how it turned out to, you know, that's how it actually came to fruition. Like, I was paying anywhere from, you know, 50 to 75% of my mortgage with a little 300 square foot apartment in my Los Angeles house. And again, the wheels were all turning here. And I was like, man, there's got to be a way to do this like on a bigger scale. So I called up a couple friends and I was like, hey, I don't know if you've heard of Airbnb, but if you rent an apartment and you sublease it out, you can make X amount of money. And they were like, sure, man, you always have crazy ideas. Let's try it. And so we each got apartments and then, you know, we all came together as a company. And that's kind of the beginning of my short-term rental journey. We did that. We expanded into a condo in Austin. And then we opened up a glamp site in the Grand Canyon where we now have 5 different listings in there. Out there, we have 2 yurts. We have 2 bell tents, a yurt, an Airstream, and A-frame. And that was sort of like, you know, the big moment for us where we're like, okay, this is how we're going to retire. This is the business that's going to like allow us to quit our jobs, right? And so we've been focusing on that for about 2 years now. We're coming up on 2 years here in December. You know, that's been like the focus. That's been my passion project. I've been doing all of this while still working a full-time job. Same thing with my wife. And, you know, after kind of doing this for a little while, I wanted to sort of share my experience and my different, you know, skills. Like I'm pretty handy, and that's just because of Airbnbs. And I built a tiny house, you know, a couple years ago. And so I've kind of amassed a few skills here. And I was like, let's put it on YouTube and let's just see how things go. And that was, you know, last January. January of 2020. And yeah, the rest is history. Here I am today on Thanks for Visiting.
Yeah, so we're so excited you're here.
We want to go back for a second to, I want to go to the glamping site. You said there's 2 yurts. Did you call them bell tents?
Yeah, so I have 2 bell tents, which are like, they're canvas tents that are shaped kind of like, you know, Bulbasaur, if you're familiar with Pokemon, or like a clove of garlic.
No.
Okay, well, let's
clove of garlic. I got it.
We like garlic references more
it's
than Pokemon.
Like garlic.
Okay.
Or Bulbasaur from Pokemon, which I hope some of your people understand.
I'm sure they will.
Or follow along with. No, I have to make it very clear. I don't still watch Pokemon. But if I did, I would be proud of it. Okay?
There you go.
So these are canvas tents, and we have a yurt, which is actually like a Mongolian hut. And then we have an Airstream, and then we have a little like 150 square foot A-frame out there.
You have like a little bit of everything, which I love.
And we'll be able to link to all of this, right, in our show notes. Can you give us listing links for all of these so our listeners can take a peek at them?
Can dive in.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. I'll send you everything afterwards.
Cool. Okay, so I have a real quick. So it sounded like you kind of started off in the master leasing / arbitrage route, but then you've pivoted into glamping essentially, or have in tiny homes. So can we talk about that? I guess.
Yeah.
Do you prefer the new route? Do you own some of these unique properties?
Sure thing. All right. Well, you know, master leasing is like the really beautiful word, you know, that's used when you're doing it all legitimately and it's all like by the book. When I started out, and I say this now because there's a point here, but when I started out, my apartment complex did not know I was Airbnb.
Uh-huh.
It was a 500 unit apartment complex. And again, I didn't want to spend $2,000 to break my lease because it was a lot of money, you sure. know, at the time. Right. And so, but I was fine with it. I was like, let's roll the dice. Let's see how it goes. And, you know, that's the same thing when my partners and I got into our apartments. We were just like subleasing and putting it on Airbnb and just like, hey, let's see how it goes. However, the positive news here is once we were actually making decent money, you know, like $1,000 to $2,000 a month on each unit, which was only 2 at the time, plus my first one that I put out, that's when we kind of realized that, you know, there's no reason to game the system. Like there's no reason to try to like hide it.
There we go.
And
there
just
we
try
go.
To make like a quick buck. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. so that is sort of, that was like our internal pivot as a, it's kind of weird to call us a company, but I guess we are. But, you know, as our company was forming, that's kind of when we realized like, yeah, I mean, if we want to make $1 million or $2 million or 3 or 4, whatever that end goal is, if we ever want to get there, we have to be by the book, you know, we have to go legit. We can't break rules or else, you know, inevitably we're just going to be shooting ourselves in the foot.
We have to say this to our listeners because it's the community that we want to build. And we understand that some people, when they get started, that's how they have to do it. But that's also, listeners, where Airbnb and Vrbo's, that's where we can get a bad name when you're right. not totally. On the up and up and you're not letting, you know, your landlord know what you're doing and your neighbors don't know what you're doing. Like, hey, hide your suitcase. It's like, that's where those days are over, you know, because there are places that will allow you to do it. They are welcoming to you. There are landlords mm-hmm. that are happy to partner with you. And so that's where, we're happy to hear, like, you know, you just saying like, hey, this is actually a legit thing. And that's what Sarah and I, that's kind of our mission, is to let everybody know it's legit for not only the hosts, but for the guests. There's so many levels that we can elevate everyone on by just, like you said, running it as a true business.
And Rob, totally. So for the second part of my question, and then do you own some of these new properties, these new experiences?
Yeah, totally. So as we kind of pivoted and we were like, let's go legit, let's do this thing the right way, we bought a condo in Austin to Airbnb. So we, you know, buy the book there. And then once we kind of started delving into the glamp side stuff, yeah, we don't own the land. We actually kind of rent it from somebody. And this mm-hmm. is part of like the model that we started on, is we find people that already own the land so that we don't have to be on the hook for the $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 to $200,000 that it costs to buy the land. So we find someone that lives there and they basically are the managers, right?
Cool.
So we own the different micro units on their land, but they get compensated to kind of, you know, be the groundskeeper of sorts.
Wow. That's genius. Listeners,
so smart.
Get out your notebook. That's super smart. And you are all of your properties on the same piece of land right now?
They are. They're kind of sprawled across like 7 to 10 acres. He's always buying new land and putting new stuff out there. But, you know, our stuff is like, you know, all kind of clustered together on his land. And then our A-frame is actually a little bit secluded, maybe 30 seconds away driving. And that's sort of like the 1.0. And again, it's all about, when it comes to Airbnb, it's all about, you know, learning how to scale up and learning how to make your business bigger, right? So, you know, we were kind of done with the, you know, the faux master leasing things. And we were like, all right, we need to figure out the real side of this business.
Yeah.
So with glamping, you know, for us, we're like, okay, let's start with the owner. Let's, you know, with someone that owns the land, let's put our different micro sites out. Let's learn what it's like to put an off-grid experience out there. And, you know, once we kind of master that, we can then go on and replicate that on our own land where we're not depending on someone to kind of be the groundskeeper. So we actually just bought right before Corona, 32 acres. And, you know, we were set to move out there and completely invest everything we had. I mean, truly, like I was ready to take out a HELOC on my house because I was like, there is nothing. There's literally nothing that could go wrong because, you know, we've been doing it. It's successful. It's like the model works. And then a pandemic happened.
Well, hold on, Rob. So can you explain to our listeners what a HELOC is, just for those who may not know?
Yes, a HELOC is a home equity line of credit. So whenever you have equity in your house, let's say that your house is worth $100,000 and you've paid off $50,000 of that balance, you have that other, well, a percentage of that $50,000 that's left over available to you as a line of credit. And it's the cheapest, fastest way to kind of fund. For me, it's been the cheapest, fastest way to fund certain projects. Yeah. But, you know, I would never advise to go into debt if you can't handle it. It's really just about kind of investing in different properties for me that I know are going to yield a higher return than the actual service on that debt.
I love that. And listeners, and Rob, I'm not sure if you know this either about Annette and I, but we're excited to bring to our listeners like two different ways of doing Airbnbs, right? Annette is like the master networker, partners up with fancy developers and does partnerships on Airbnbs and short-term rentals. Where I'm obsessed with, you know, property ownership and owning properties and building, you know, long-term wealth through real estate. And so there's so many ways to short-term rent, but those are like, I feel like the two different ways to, you know, to partner up, whether the guy owns the land and you figure out the build or you own the whole thing. Like, owning real estate isn't a bad thing. You can still make money owning properties and short-term renting them, or you don't have to. That's a good way to get started and to generate revenue. So, okay, so now you have...
Coronavirus hits.
Yeah.
Did we put the HELOC? Do we pump the brakes? What happened?
What happened?
We did, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and the thing is, we would have figured it out. But, you know, like, it was definitely one of those things that was just like a little bit of perspective, right? Like, we all get stars in our eyes in this industry because we know that it works. And we know that if you, you know, you curate your space and you take professional photos and you respond to inquiries and you build up your reviews, for the most part, like you're going to have, you're going to be batting at least a single, double, triple home run, right? Like for me, all of my properties have always been home runs for me. Some have been grand slams just because I'm like, this works. This is a really quality, you know, listing with a great return. So we were just kind of like running away with that idea. We felt invincible, which I think a lot of hosts can probably relate to, I would imagine. And, you know, we were ready to just kind of like, you know, bet the farm and, you know, Corona hit. And we were just like, all right, well, we haven't actually done anything. We haven't we haven't spent any money. We haven't made any big decisions, but we were, you know, we were definitely planning everything out. And all we had to do was just kind of take a step back and say, look, it's going to be fine. Like pandemics happen. Maybe the country will keep it under control and maybe like things will kind of bounce back to normal. And, you know, we were just trying to keep a positive mindset. And, you know, we did have to kind of close down our glamp site for the most part, not close it down, but, you know, we had a lot of cancellations and, you know, I'm sure a lot of guests or a lot of hosts were kind of dealing with the tension of Airbnb sort of canceling by default and their extenuating circumstances, policy and everything like that. We just made the decision as a company, all right, look, this sucks. Okay. we're going to lose a lot of money here, but let's just refund everybody. Let's not deal with all the little arguments and, you know, all the tensions and all that kind of stuff. So we just made the decision for those 3 months, which was, I guess, February, March, and April. If someone asked for a refund, we gave it to them and we just bit the bullet and we didn't make money for those 3 months, but we don't really have any debt on that operation. So, you know, and our expenses are really, really low on that operation because, you know, it's all paid for. So we were just like, okay, I mean, you know, we're just not going to make money, but hey, at least we're not losing it. And it kind of, it's not a great situation for anybody. And so, you know, after that, things started to trickle in and then now we're back to 100% occupancy for the most part. So things are okay now and it just takes a little bit of patience and not over leveraging yourself. And I think for a lot of hosts that didn't over leverage themselves, they may be finding themselves busier than ever at the moment.
And by over leverage, you mean like, you know, listeners, that's kind of like, worst case scenario, now we know worst case scenario could be as epic as a pandemic. Could you still afford all of your ventures, you know, if you were down to 0%?
Yeah, and 0%
how many months
can you
could you last with that? So that's what leveraging, over leveraging, that's what people mean when they say that. And I love that, Rob. So, but then also tell our listeners, what else did you venture into in 2020?
Wow, that is, okay, that's a great question. I'm going to just start with the most important thing, which is I had a baby on January 16th of 2020. And that was the joy of my life. I mean, sorry, that is the joy of my life. It's still the joy. But, you know, it was kind of one of those weird things where I came off of, for paternity leave, you know, our last day at work was December 23rd. And I didn't have to go back to the office until March 1st. So I had like a pretty decent paternity leave. And pandemic, like as soon as I came home, or sorry, as soon as I came to work that first week, I think I worked like 3 days. And then they sent us home to work from home for until now still, you know, until next, this upcoming January. So I personally feel like I've been on an extended, a very weird paternity leave of sorts because I've been working from home with my baby, which has been super awesome. But obviously, you know, working from home, I have a lot of time to kind of venture out and do different projects. And I'm a big DIY guy. And most people on my Instagram that ever followed me just kind of knows that like I'm always fixing my house because in LA, I bought a fixer. Well, it wasn't a fixer. Like it's a totally fine house, but it's not like, it wasn't like a beautiful house when we bought it. And like little by little, I was always working on it and always posting it to my stories. And people were just like, man, you gotta, you know, you gotta get your own HD TV show. And like, you need to, you know, and so they were always encouraging me to like, kind of like show more of this content. So at the very beginning of January, well, no, sorry, that was a little convoluted, but let me just say on December 23rd, the last day before I went home for paternity leave, I went to a lunch with, you know, a couple of friends. And for some reason we started talking about YouTube and, you know, I was like, hey, I've got this crazy idea. I've been wanting to do it for like 10 years now. And they're like, what is it? And I was like, I want to do like a DIY channel that's kind of weird and funny. Cause I don't feel like anyone in the space has done that before. And they all like pretty much at the exact same time. They were like, dude, you got to do that. Like, you have to do that. That sounds awesome. And I was like, yeah, you think people would watch that? And they were like, Definitely. So a week later, I posted my first YouTube channel, like, you know, that first week of January. And, you know, at the time I started the channel just kind of thinking, hey, I'm going to put this out into the world. And it's probably going to be years before anything happens. And, you know, over the course of the past few months, it's turned out to be such a wild ride for me.
Tell our listeners how many subscribers you currently have.
I, at the moment, have 41,000 subscribers. And, you know, it's really funny because when I got into the YouTube game, I remember I posted like a video on Reddit and I was like, hey, for my New Year's resolution, I decided to like start a YouTube channel on the DIY subreddit. And, you know, I got a couple of like upvotes or whatever. But then on my like second video, I put it out on Reddit again because sometimes you need to just keep reposting until people care. And I was like, all right, I started a New Year's resolution, started a YouTube channel. Here's my video on how to make DIY cable railing. And that one took off on Reddit. And that, you know, was voted up to the front page. And I think I had like 3,400 upvotes. And I got like 300 or 400 subscribers out of it. And I was like, wow, like I did it. If I can get 1,000, like this is going to be so, so great. You know, and I was like so excited. And for like the next like 6 months, literally like I was putting out videos like every day. And I was just like, not every day, every week, sometimes twice a week. I was editing until 2 or 3 in the morning, like every single week. Cause I work a full-time job. I'm a dad and I'm not an editor. Like I'm able to edit, but that's not something I'm proficient in. And so I was always up just like so late every night. And for 6 months, I was really grinding it out. And I remember on June 18th, I hit 1,000 subscribers and I was like, wow, I've done it. I have cracked this
system.
June
18th of this year, right? Just remind our listeners that.
Of 2020. Yeah. And so I was like 6 months, I did it like 1,000. That was like my big, big goal to myself. And I was like, all right. You know, like I remember posting to Instagram and I was like, you know, here's to 5,000. And I was thinking like 3 or 4, you know, years later, I might hit 5,000 because like it was so hard to get to 1,000. And they always say like the first 1,000 is your hardest, which is definitely true. But I really didn't expect to get to 5,000 subscribers 4 or 5 days later. So it was really, I don't know, like a little emotional. I mean, I was a little emotional like when I got 1,000 because I was like, yay, people care, you know? And, you know, I was putting out DIY videos and I was teaching people how to do a board and batten wall or, you know, how to hang a shade sail. And that shade sail was like one of the top ranking. It's the number one. If you type in shade sail, I'm pretty sure it's like the first thing that shows up. So it was getting like 1,000 views every day. And so little by little, I was kind of getting to that 1,000 kind of ticker that I set for myself. And, you know,
What are you saying? A shade sail?
A shade sail, you know, like those, like, they're kind of like a, I don't want to say a tarp. It's like a canvas.
Oh, yeah. It's like a sail that shades you.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. Oh, Maddie.
Okay, I learned so much on this show. I'm going to keep listening. All right, keep going. No,
it's all good. And sorry, feel free to interrupt. I feel like I'm just going on here. But, no. But, you know, so I was putting out this kind of content. And I remember on my like second or third video, I was like, I'm going to be a vlogger. And so I was like, I was walking outside with my tripod and my iPhone. I didn't have a lapel mic or a lavalier mic at the time. And my wife's like, what are you going to vlog about? And I was like, I don't know, the tiny house in the backyard. And she was like, all right, well, if you say so, you know. So I go onto my deck and I frame it horribly. It's like from my chest up and it's like none of my body. And like the audio is bad and it's like peeking from the wind. And I'm like rambling just the way I am right now. And I was like, here's my tiny house. I built it for $72,000. And I was just kind of like, you know, I don't know. I was just like talking, right? I had no idea what I was doing. Well, whatever. I posted that and I kept posting more videos. And then like around June 1st, you know, roughly 6 months after that, I like looked at my stats and I was used to getting like 50 to 100 views a day total, right? And I saw that video, that random tiny house vlog that I made had like 2,000 views. And I was like that day. And I was like, what? You know, and I was so shocked. I was like, I don't understand. This must be, the YouTube must be broken. And and so I was just like, all right, whatever, cool. And then the next day it was like 4,000. And then the next day it was 6 and then 20 and then 40 and then 50,000. And then you know, it got all the way up to like 300,000 views in like a week. And so, or like 2 weeks or something like that. And that's when I was, that's when I got to 5,000 subscribers, because people were like sharing and watching that video. And they always say that never discount any video on YouTube. Like, it could go viral or it can take off like many, many months or even years after the fact. I never really thought that that was true, but you know, it was. And so, like 5 days after I got to 5,000 subscribers, I got to 10, and then, I got to 18,000 because like in like another week after that, because I posted another tour of my tiny house in Joshua Tree, California. And again, like that one was one that I shot with my best friend, and I was like, all right, let's go. And we're just like running and gunning, and it, nothing to it really. But I remember I like put it out there, and I went to bed, and when I woke up, it had like 5 to 10,000 views, like wow, 1 hour after I posted it or something. And I remember I turned to my wife and I was like, I did it. She was like, what? And I was like, I think I did it. I think I went viral, you know? And it was like only like 5 to 10,000 views, but I was like, it was so unparalleled to like the rest of my content that I was like, I think I did it, you know? And I was just like in shock, right? And then, yeah, that day it got like 100,000 views. And now I think it's got 750,000, which again, it's not like the most views compared to a lot of people out there. But for me, it was a real,
oh, that's,
you know,
impressive. And go ahead, Annette.
I think it, let's tell our listeners exactly what those videos are about, because I think it speaks to where we are right now with the pandemic, with people wanting to take control of their finances, with people potentially wanting to start a side hustle, and also your properties, maybe people wanting to, you know, maybe not have as large of expenses. So people might be looking at these videos for inspiration. So tell our listeners what those two videos specifically, because I think right on the header, it says like my $72,000 tiny home. And then like the other, it says the price of both of them, correct?
Exactly. That's right. So I think like the, you know, and the one thing that's very true about YouTube is that like, it's obviously clickbaity titles and thumbnails, the shock, like faces on thumbnails are like what draw people in. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that yet. Like, I don't really even have Photoshop, so I couldn't do that. So I took a photo of my house, and like my tiny house is cute. And I was like, boom. And it was like inside my $72,000 tiny house. And that, you know, because that was taking off, I think that was when I was like, oh, people like my tiny houses. That's interesting. And so I was like, let's go out to Joshua Tree and shoot my other tiny house. And so that one was called Inside My $165,000 Tiny House. And that photo was just really good. And I also think YouTube likes controversy too, not to get too into it, but they like to see that people are arguing and engaging and disliking your video. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I built this tiny house for me and my family to, you know, provide for us, but it makes a lot of people angry that I built an expensive tiny house, you know? And
really?
So
interesting.
And because of that, people are just like, you know, like a lot of comments are like, you're so dumb. I can't believe you would do that, you know, and blah, blah, blah. This part of the country, you can get a mansion and blah, you know? And so like, they were all giving me a hard time, but for the most part, 90 to 95%, you know, very positive. And I think that people just really like tiny houses, right? And the trend is to build a tiny house on wheels. And so that for a long time has been very popular. So I just think that idea of like a tiny house, you know, on a fixed foundation that's two stories and 300 square feet and it's $165,000 is just a unique set of juxtapositions that I think just made it, you know, snackable, I guess, as they say. And of course, like YouTube at the moment, is everyone that started a channel is really benefiting from what's called subscriber surge because everyone's at home watching YouTube. So I just kind of had I'm lucky, you know, I had a lot of luck. Like people were watching my channel. People were watching a lot of YouTube, and, you know, the YouTube gods decided to promote one video. And I think that it's a lot of luck at the beginning, you know, and that was around the time when I was like, okay, people like this. And so I decided to just like kind of heavy up and completely pivot my channel to be about Airbnb and short-term rentals and my tiny houses. And that's kind of where I've taken the path of my channel. And it's really gratifying because, you know, people like comment very nice things and they say that they want to get into Airbnb and they want to build tiny houses. And like, for me, that really makes it all worth it.
So let's bring it home for our listeners too, and how this might inspire them, maybe not to do the exact thing that you're doing, but just to go for whatever it is that they keep dreaming about. So, and the difference between you and our past guest, Levi, is Levi goes and he reviews them as the guest, but you run short-term rentals yourself. So has the YouTube channel, has sharing your experience building, creating, running short-term rentals, has it helped your short-term rental business, whether directly in terms of bookings or just making you a better host or more well-rounded owner? Talk to us about how both of these, I guess they're still kind of side hustles, even though I'm sure they're taking up a lot of your time. How they're feeding each other.
That's a good question. You know what? I don't really have the data to say if it's really, I mean, look, I've gotten a few people that have specifically said in their initial messages, and they message me, they're like, hey, I found your cute tiny house on YouTube. You know, can I stay?
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say that only like 3 or 4 people have said that. Now, that also, like, Levi did a video on my house, and it has like 500,000 views now as well. And I don't think I've necessarily gotten, I mean, I might have gotten people that have stayed, but no one ever says, hey, I think one person, when he stayed out at the Grand Canyon, did mention like, oh, I saw Levi's video, I'm going to stay here. We're like, great, you know, thanks for staying. But for the most part, I'm not 100% sure what the correlation is, just because people don't, you know, they don't mention it.
Sure.
But it definitely made me want to start kind of figuring out ways to like pull that information out of people, because people may just, you know, they're not, it's just like a random thing to throw out in their intro message.
Do you find yourself, though, being equally satisfied running and creating short-term rentals and creating this content on YouTube?
Equally, yes. I would say so. I mean, it's hard because I love both things. Like,
right.
I love Airbnb. Like, I did Airbnb before I was a YouTuber, which is weird to call myself that. But before I was YouTubing, you know, I was doing Airbnb. And that, to me, like, for me, when I started my career as a creative copywriter, I wanted to be like the rock star creative, right? And I wanted to win Cannes Awards, and I wanted to, you know, to like just kind of rock it in the advertising industry. And so that's what I wanted. And because, you know, I'm a creative, and like I was like, if I can be a rock star creative and make cool commercials, people are going to like care about me, right? You know, I don't know that.
Yeah.
Sounds like I'm talking to a therapist right now, but like
Sarah and I are sitting on a couch. No, it's fine. Just keep going.
but that's what I wanted in life, was just like creative validation, right? And then when I found Airbnb, like, I kind of figured out very quickly that I could be literally as creative as I wanted. I could think of anything, you know, let's put a bathtub in the middle of the desert, whatever it is, like whatever crazy idea you have for Airbnb, nobody can tell you no.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is true creativity. Like, you know, my tiny house in Joshua Tree, it's in an area called Conejo, which is Spanish for rabbit. And I was like, hell, let's just do the hare house, right? Casita Conejo. Let's do a rabbit themed Airbnb. And so it's like all cute and, you know, like nicely designed on the inside, but we also have like rabbit wallpaper and like a rabbit gallery wall and like rabbit bookends. And it's like, it's teetering like hokey, but it's specifically curated to be like, nice, you know? And so for me, I get true creative validation just from reading reviews and people who have loved their stay, and they, you know, make it a point to like write paragraphs on the reviews to me. It's like, it's so touching that for me, as soon as I started kind of realizing that with Airbnb, whether it's my Glamp site where people say that they've cozied up to a fire, you know, with their kids and played board games at a cast iron stove and they reconnected with their family like never before, like that kind of stuff to me, I'm like, man, not only can I be like creative, but I can also help, you know, families make memories together. And I don't know, I have like a direct part that I play in that. And so for me, I was just like, that's when I kind of realized like advertising is cool, but I'm also answering to so many layers of people before I even get to execute my creative vision. And then by the end of it, it looks nothing like, you know, when I started. And so I still love advertising and everything like that. But Airbnb, it's like, no one can say no. Except for my wife. She will, you know, tell me if my design decisions aren't working out. And I do appreciate that. But other than her, like, it's, you know, I'm the creative director. And that's kind of what I get out of YouTube as well. Like, YouTube is kind of my outlet to like be weird and funny and like kind of have whatever I could literally do anything I want in my YouTube channel. And like, the only person that can say no is me, you know? And like, I don't know, I get that equally out of both Airbnb and YouTubing. So that's kind of why I'm like, man, if I can just do both full time, my life is going to be like what I want. My life is what I want now. But like, if I can just do that full time, then I'm like, man, that's, I found it. I found the secret to happiness, you know, other than like a healthy family and love and friends and
all that stuff. Yeah.
Outside, all that stuff, you know, but other than that stuff, from a career perspective, that to me is happiness.
Well, I think Annette, there's no one that gets you better than Annette and myself, or at least on this podcast call, because, you know, we run them, we create them, we talk about them on our podcast. Like, and I just want that to inspire listeners, you know, it doesn't have to be content creation, but you can truly make your hosting or your short-term rental business, like you said, Robert, like anything you want, you know? So dive deep into who you are as a person. And there is just so many avenues that you can make a living. And speaking of, I know you're open about this. So can you share with our listeners how much your tiny houses can earn? Like, can you
let a listener?
So if a listener hasn't yet embarked on this journey, like let them know what they could possibly expect.
Well, so yes, my channel is about financial transparency. And I think, you know, this is part of why I kind of went this way in the YouTube channel, is just like whenever people talk about how much money they make, but they don't actually show you how much money they make,
you're
I'm like, something's not adding up here. But for me, you know, I was like, all right, let's be out there and let's show people. And so, you know, my tiny house in LA, that one cost me $72,000 to build. And my expenses on that were running around, I think, like $1,000 at the time, because I had, you know, I had like a bigger loan on that. Mm-hmm. I have since kind of consolidated that. And now my expenses on that are closer to like $400 a month.
Nice.
On that specific property. But, you know, pre-pandemic, I was booking pretty close to $3,000 to $4,000 a month gross. And that was really great. I was like, man, this is awesome. Because, you know, for about a year and a half, I was renting it out to my best friend for like $1,500. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, that whole year and a half, I was like, man, I love that he lives here, but if I could just throw it on Airbnb, I could make more, you know? And so, sorry.
You're like, it's time to move.
I did the same thing to my friends. They still love me, but I was like, so there's this thing called Airbnb. You guys got to go.
I was like, I love you, but you gots to go. No, but it all kind of worked out because we were having our baby. And we needed the back house to be open so that family could come stay. And again, that is perhaps the biggest benefit of Airbnb is that you can block it off and use it for personal use.
Right.
So pre-pandemic, I was grossing $3,000 to $4,000. You know, I assume that had I been able to carry on before Corona, I was probably going to be pretty close to $4,500. But we'll get to that in a second. Corona hit. I had to reevaluate my entire strategy there. So I decided to start booking long-term nurses and giving them a discount, a pretty sizable one. So instead of a $4,000 month, I was discounting it down to about $2,200 for a month, so long as they were a frontline worker. And I have stayed 100% booked on that, on my tiny house, like since the beginning of the pandemic. There's not been, other than blocking it off in between stays to sanitize and do all that kind of jazz, I haven't had any open days, which is awesome. Like my current guest right now, she's here for 41 days. And then the guest before that was here for 60. So it's been working out. So tiny house in LA, I'm making, I think like now with my new kind of expenses on that house, I'm making close to like $1,500 to $1,800 profit on the LA tiny house, which is really great for, you know, like what I invested. And I'm like super happy with that.
How are you?
To get interesting.
Oh, sorry, real quick though. How are you? Because I know our listeners are going to wonder. How are you finding your frontline nurses? Is it through Airbnb and your verbiage on your listing, or are you using another site? Okay.
Great question. So, technically anyone can book with that discount, but I specifically tailor it to, you know, frontline nurses, and it's really quite simple. Airbnb has certain things that you can and can't say in your title, but you know, my title says, frontline workers, welcome in my tiny house in all caps. And that's it. Like, it's very simple. And then my first paragraph, I think I say like, if you're a short-term nurse, whatever, a travel nurse, you know, come stay, you're welcome here. We'll give you a discount, this and that. So again, other people are technically able to book at that price. I also opted into the Airbnb like travel nurse program or like the frontline worker program. And so just by doing that, I've managed to stay 100% because I'm in LA. It's a big city, popular. So I was kind of like, I was nervous though for, you know, the beginning of the pandemic when this was all happening. I was like, shoot, like what's going to happen? You know, and I was truly like reevaluating my life. I was like, man, what, like, what, where can I move money around? Where can I do this? Like, how can I get this rented long-term? And, you know, I was really kind of scrambling for like a week. And then I was like, all right, just like, let's calm down. Everything will be fine. You have quality listings. You will beat out the competition because you have spent the time to make a quality listing, right? And so I was like, all right, great. I adjusted my listing, boom, and I've been booked ever since on that LA house.
Amazing. Okay, Joshua Tree. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. It's okay. But so Joshua Tree is where it gets super interesting. So all of my expenses on that, my mortgage is $850 a month, and all of my expenses kind of run like $1,200, sometimes $1,100, sometimes $13, but I think $1,200 is pretty good. And then in July, I think I made like $2,700. And then in August, I made $3,300. And then in September, I just kept jacking up prices because, like, you know, life pro tip for anyone listening that doesn't know, but if you're booked 100%, I personally think you're priced too low. So I would just keep moving it up. And so I was booking like, you know, 135 and 149 on the weekends. And then I jumped it up to 175 and now it's 199. And I think for November, I've got it at 215 during the day, during the regular days, and then 249 on the weekends.
Nice.
And that's how I booked out most of October. So I think I haven't run the calculations on this yet, but I think in September, I will be grossing pretty close to, I'll be profiting pretty close to 4,000. And then October should be pretty close. I'm not 100% sure yet. There's a couple things I have to run the numbers on, but I think I might actually make a $5,000 profit on Casita Conejo.
Nice. That's a mic drop. Everyone's got their like calculator and their maps out.
They're
right
like,
now.
Wait, I can do this.
they're going to your YouTube channel.
As I said, so many people were hating on YouTube on it, and I'm just like, you didn't know what you were talking about.
You laugh your way all the way at the bank, sir.
Oh, so good. What do you think? For our listeners out there, if they are, you know, they're thinking about expanding their, if they have one and they're thinking about expanding, what's your number one tip for them? As far as, is it mindset of purchasing another place? Like once you start to grow, obviously there's, you know, there's more cleaners to think about. There's more maintenance to think about. What's a tip that you can give them as they start to expand? Because I'm sure all of our listeners are super inspired by you today. But what's a tip you can give them about expanding their short-term rental business?
Okay, I'm going to give it to you in two steps. Mm-hmm. Okay, first tip, life pro tip. Make sure that when you go to your second listing that you can afford a pandemic.
Yes, there you go.
I cannot stress that enough. Make sure that you have 6 months of reserves. Like this is not something that I necessarily did either. Luckily, I work a full-time job, so does my wife. So we had the money to cover if anything happened. But I think a lot of people, like I've always stretched myself super thin financially to kind of meet my goals. And that's not something that I necessarily recommend. You know, especially now after a pandemic, I just, my main tip is like, make sure you can afford the worst case scenario. In my mind, the worst case scenario was like, someone throws a party and I have to pay like $2,000 or $3,000 in damages. But
you're like,
you know,
that's nothing now.
Yeah. I mean, truly. And so make sure that you can afford whatever runway, you know, 6 months is. And that's number one for me. With that said, let's say people are like, I've got the money, I've got the runway. What other tips do you have for me, Robert? Okay. Tip number two will be to not overthink it. You know, I think analysis paralysis is probably the thing that kind of is everyone's vice in this industry, and you try to solve everything. And this is definitely something that I tell people like in my consultations every single day when they're like, what about this and what about that? And, you know, the cleaners and like, do I find them on Thumbtack? What if they only have 4 stars on Thumbtack? You know, like they just get so bogged down in the details. I think you just have to like go, you have to like jump in and make that decision. So if you're thinking about buying a house in Joshua Tree, for example, getting a hold of a realtor, get on a list and start making offers. Because if you don't jump in and you try to like solve every problem, you're just not going to expand.
I love it. I have another quick question for you before we get into like what's next for you. And that is, how important is the design and investing in the interior, the exterior, those small wow factors? I mean, you're not doing lackluster, mediocre, you know, you're putting cute bunny rabbit wallpaper. So talk to us about how important that is to you and your business moving forward.
For sure. Well, you know what? When I started out, my apartment in LA, I was literally going on Let Go and Offer Up, Craigslist free. And I remember I'd be like, babe, look at this fake leather couch. It folds down. And she'd be like, yeah, sure. You know, and I was just like getting anything I could to furnish my first apartment. And then I was like, whatever's not in here, I'm going to fill it in with some IKEA, throw a little Target over here. It's going to be great. I would love to send you photos of that.
I would love to see it. Yeah.
Because that apartment was janky. I mean, it was not good. And you know what? It's one of those weird things. It was 100% booked and it was profiting like $1,000 to $2,000 every month because it was 15 minutes away from LA and LAX. And I was like, all right, well, clearly something's working. And, you know, when we started to kind of go into the next two apartments, same thing, like I was doing free, you know, Craigslist. I was paying $15 for the couch if I really, really needed to. And I was furnishing with IKEA and Target like all day. And there's nothing wrong with that. But compared to what I'm doing now, my whole philosophy has changed. I've always been cheap my entire life. It's a very well-known joke in my, it's a very well-known fact in my friend group that I'm the cheap guy. Like I'm the frugal guy. I'm the guy that's always looking for the deal. I'm always the guy that's hustling to save $5, you know? And so when my wife would be like, hey, let's buy this throw pillow. And I'd be like, oh, dear God, it's $35. You know, I would really cringe at that, you know? But as I started getting super serious and like really understanding Airbnb, like I think what happened is I look at like at the moment, like 50 to 100 listings a day, just because I am always comping out like new ventures and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And I was just saying, like, I was going through these different things in Joshua Tree. I'd be like, oh, I've got that Target lamp. Oh, I've got that IKEA bed frame. Oh, I've got that Target like wall painting. And I was like, dang, like everyone's doing that, you know? And so that's when I was like, all right, you know what? Like, you got to spend the money because the thing is, like, IKEA is great for certain things. Like, I get all my sheets from IKEA and I get like certain like silverware and like kitchenware from there. But for the most part, like, you know, Target and IKEA can often break because they sometimes look nice, but they're not necessarily like super quality items. And so I got tired of always having to replace like this, you know, like this like side table or this lamp. Like I have bought endless Target lamps and literally every single Target lamp I've ever owned has broken. I don't understand why. And I don't understand why I keep making the mistake, but I really kind of decided to start spending a lot of money on design because I was like, you know, I can't, why have a beautiful tiny house that was like luxury and $165,000 if I wasn't going to match it with the interior design and making sure that I was spending money on like adult IKEA, which is like World Market or, you know, CB2 or, you know, Crate and Barrel or Restoration Hardware. Like I really started investing in the actual look and trying to curate the space because I was like, look, if I do this perfectly, not only will I be 100% booked, but I'll be 100% booked at the price that I want to be 100% booked at. And that's really how it's worked out for me. So now, I mean, I think it's crazy. If I had told this to Robert from like 2 years ago that I was in World Market last week and I spent $1,200 on fake plants and throw pillows. I don't know. If I could. I mean, it's like crazy.
That's crazy. Like I was there yesterday. It's probably spent three. I don't know. No, gosh. I hear you. Like, and here's the thing. If I would tell old Robert too, like, okay, like those couches from Let Go and all those things, you know, had you continued that 100% occupancy, either your spaces would start to look real tired and your reviews would reflect that and then you'd buy it again. You know what I mean? So like just buy it right the first time and you can just think about expanding or doing that next best thing rather than worrying about the quality of your sofas and how they look. You know what I mean? Like there's just, you got to think bigger, listeners. Like you can't get hung up on a few $100 if you've got this bigger vision for yourself and for what your guests experience and, you know, the brand you want to build. So yeah, I wanted to touch on that. I knew Annette was sharing with me your journey on the design front. And I just love that. I feel like another one has been converted to our side of a beautifully designed
space. I mean, spend the money, you know, like it hurts. Look, it's not like I like spending $1,200 on throw pillows and fake plants, but like, I also really like looking at the photos of my listing, you know, in just like a reflective, like comparing it to my first set of apartments. I'm just like, wow, I really feel like I am not an expert, but like I could hold my own with like pros, you know, like I have a buddy who's an interior designer, like architect, and I run him through my ideas and I'm like, all right, man, I'm going to do like pink tile and green tile. And like, what do you think? Am I dumb? And he's like, actually, it's pretty good. Like I would do that. And I was like, oh, great. You know? And so I don't know. I think there's also just a little bit of pride in having a one of a kind listing.
Yeah.
And, you know, with Conejo, I was like, well, it's one of a kind architecturally, but what if I could make it one of a kind architecturally and from an interior design standpoint? And so I was like, why, instead of hitting a home run, what if I could hit a grand slam, you know? And that was kind of my goal with that house.
I think that's a perfect place to end with the grand slam.
Yeah. What's next for you, Robert? What do you got planned for yourself and your business in the future?
That's a good question. This is something that's changing all the time, but I have a plan. I have a mood board in my head. I haven't actually made the mood board, but you know, I am currently creating a couple of courses. Right now I just shot how to start a glamping business, you know, an off-grid glamping business. And that's going to be a 10-hour course. Editing that is a bear. I thought it was going to be like a month-long thing. I think now it's going to be like 2 months, and that's cool. I'm trying to buy acreage in a house in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, so that I can start my own off-grid glamp site kind of solo project. And I'm going to go look at an Airstream in a couple days from now. And I plan on actually building an Airstream treehouse.
Cool. Mm. Wait, you're going to put the Airstream in the tree?
Hmm. Yeah. So I want to build like a 20 to 30 foot deck that's kind of suspended in the air and then crane the Airstream onto that so that it's kind of like within the forest.
That is very cool.
Yes.
I'm into that.
Yes. We're feeling that one.
I like that.
We'll have to podcast live from that when it opens
when we
up.
Come visit you.
Definitely.
Maybe one of your first guests.
We'll come I don't in. Know if I'll have Wi-Fi, but
we don't. Oh, we don't need it.
We don't need it.
Yeah, we just don't need Wi-Fi.
We just need electricity.
Yes, we could even go without that.
I'll see what I can do. I'll see if I can get you electricity. I'm working on that.
So, where can our listeners find out more about you, Robert? Where do you want them to reach out to you and talk about glamping and Airstreams and trees?
And subscribe and like and maybe get into some banter online.
Sure thing. So, my YouTube channel is called Rob Built. It's like Robert and Built, like rebuilt, R O B U I L T. A lot of people think it's pronounced Robuilt. I say it every single video and people still think it's Robuilt. So maybe I'll rebrand it to that.
Okay.
But you can also find me on Instagram at Robuilt as well. Robuilt.
Awesome.
All right, listeners, we'll put all of that information in the show notes that we will email out to you. If you're not on our email list, you should get on it because you're probably DIYing something in your new short-term rental or driving to World Market and getting a lot of fake plants. So don't worry about it. We got that information coming to you. Robert, thank you so much for sharing your numbers with us, your dreams with us, your struggles, your triumphs, the realities of what we do. We just really appreciate that. I know our listeners do too.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. This is my, other than the podcast that I started with my best friend like 4 years ago and never released, this is the first podcast I've ever been on.
Yay! Oh my gosh. It won't be your last. I can tell you that.
We'll give you 5 stars as a guest.
Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh. Sarah and I really just laughed hard at our Airbnb humor. That's podcast/Airbnb humor.
Yeah.
All right, listeners, thank you so much for listening. Go like, subscribe to Rob. He was amazing. I know Sarah and I are probably going to talk for the next hour now after we hang up with him. But so we are.
I am Sarah Karakayan.
I'm Annette Grant. And we are.
Thanks for visiting. We will talk to y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to the Thanks for Visiting podcast. Head on over to the show notes for this episode at thanksforvisiting.me. If you're looking to take your listing to the next level and show your guests how much you care, be sure to check out our line of thoughtful hosting products, from hosting checklists to custom mugs to toilet paper stickers. We've got you covered. And if you love our show, remember, sharing is caring. Please hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Awesome reviews help us bring you awesome content. Thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to hanging out with you next week. Thanks for visiting.
Ever
wonder what it would be like to have personalized guidance from Annette and me? Imagine achieving the same incredible results we helped Amy achieve, increasing her overall revenue by a staggering 187% by diving into her biz numbers. Or perhaps you'd love to boost your hosting business like Miranda, who added a fantastic $10,000 by refining her pet policy. Well, here's a scoop. There's only one way to get that one-on-one support from Annette, myself, our expert coaches, and our industry pros is by attending our on-demand workshop. Trust us, it's worth it. During the workshop, we'll make an offer to all of our attendees to join our membership. Once you're a part of our exclusive membership, you'll gain access to our elite community of hosts in our private Facebook group. This is where the magic truly happens. Members are engaging in discussions about their business numbers, occupancy rates, how to handle guest challenges, and providing unwavering support to one another. Plus, we will have live coaching calls to help you dive deeper into portfolio growth, team building, marketing, and so much more. Don't wait any longer. Head on over to www.hostmasterclass.com right now to secure your spot and embark on this exciting journey with us. That's www.hostmasterclass.com. Trust us, you won't regret it.